Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am Josh and I am joined by John.
Hello.
And today we are going to be talking about nostalgia. We're going to provide some examples. I think it's a particularly interesting emotion because not many emotions are a mix of both positive and negative.
Mm.
Most emotions are either categorised as very positive or very negative. Mm-hmm. It's very rare to have a mixture of both, and I think we can tease out some interesting things about this. Also, we're going to look at whether it's good or bad, whether people feel this emotion. And we're also going to look at some of the supposed implications of it on politics,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the so-called research on it is very much biased. And I've had to suffer through an inordinate amount of left-wing academic literature. So,
yeah, the left-wing is obsessed with discrediting nostalgia, particularly in post-colonial studies. And I find that mm-hmm. rather interesting, the fact that they've been so fixated on this for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And the right wing has just sort of not paid much attention to it. So
it's kind of a weird partisan issue because you look at any of the literature on nostalgia and they're using it to explain any kind of populist or right-wing movement.
Discredit it, basically.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, it's just nostalgia.
But then,
you know, that kind of attitude.
But the motivation for that thing is nostalgia, not a relevant
exactly. But thing. Often they are right that there is a nostalgic motivation there. But the question is, why is that such a bad thing?
Mm-hmm.
And in left-wing circles, it seems to be taken for granted, partly because of this weight mm-hmm. of academia, that it is such a bad thing. And I think we should challenge that.
Mm-hmm. And I think in looking at nostalgia, it'd probably be helpful for us to tease out exactly what it is and what effect it has on people, when mm-hmm. it's triggered, and when it might be useful, when it might not be.
Mm.
So I know I certainly feel nostalgia quite often mm-hmm. for things. I don't know whether it's a feeling you feel particularly often.
Well, I suppose I don't have much of a frame of reference, do I, having only had one life? But I think that... I think that in a place like Britain, where you're surrounded by so much history all about mm-hmm. you, like 1,000-year-old churches mm-hmm. and things like this, then it's probably more often that you mm-hmm. feel nostalgia here than somewhere where there sure. is less visible history.
Mm-hmm. But first, I feel like I should probably define it mm-hmm. as clearly as possible. I'm sure everyone knows roughly what it is, but it's good to be on the same page. So the Cambridge Dictionary definition is simply a feeling of pleasure and also slight sadness when you think about things that happened in the past. So it's very clear what the dictionary definition is anyway.
Well, I feel that the sadness is the more prominent part. It's more the slight sadness and slight pleasure, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Or slight sadness relating to past pleasure or something like that. I don't know.
I think from my own personal experience of nostalgia, it's normally a pleasant emotion. I think... There might be a longing for the past attached to a certain memory, but mm-hmm. to kind of dwell in pleasant memories, which nostalgia often is, it's you're not nostalgic for bad things happening to you. That would be a bit maladaptive, wouldn't it?
I feel that the sadness is predominant because it's a recognition of in that emotion of something lost.
Mm-hmm.
Would be my.
Well, yeah, because I suppose you wouldn't be nostalgic for something that you...
That still exists.
Yeah. So there are lots of things that you value that you're not necessarily... you've not necessarily lost. But if you look back on the past and it's still there to this day, then sure, you may have some pleasant memories attached, but it wouldn't evoke nostalgia. Mm. It's something important, something that you value that seems to... no longer be there in the same form.
Mm-hmm. But you would emphasise the positive aspect of it, you think?
Perhaps, but that might just be that despite being very cynical about politics, interpersonally, I'm quite optimistic.
Well, I don't know. I think, I might be in the wrong here, so to speak. I might be more unusual in that I consider it as something negative because I associate it more strongly with loss. Maybe more people associate it more strongly with the former experience and the mm-hmm. pleasure of that time.
I think... It depends on how you're viewing the experience of recollecting something, because actually dwelling in the memory and almost revisiting it like you're there in your kind of mind's eye, you almost feel like you're experiencing it again to a lesser extent.
Right.
And therefore you can kind of lose yourself in the memory a little bit And that can be quite pleasant because you can almost experience something on demand, which is a pleasant memory. Mm. And that's quite a nice power to have. Say you don't feel very happy or positive, you can just sit down and think of pleasant things that, sure, you might make you feel a little bit sad that it's no longer the case, but it could also have a positive effect on you. So,
absolutely. You're probably going to answer this later on, but I was wondering if there's a clear evolutionary argument for why we feel nostalgia.
I may as well get onto it now, but it's kind of hypothesized that obviously we don't know for certain, as with many evolutionary things, because you can't carry out direct experiments, can you? But it's assumed that its association with past memories and positive past memories might have some survival benefit. One, for restoring motivation. So you had a past condition that was good, and you think about it, okay, well, I recognize what's been lost. Maybe that's something I can strive for again.
Right.
And also, it might just be good for, say, a hunter-gatherer. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, these bushes had some really good berries on. I'm recalling, that's a really good time when I found all those really nice berries. They're really tasty.
And so it motivates him towards recreating that kind of situation, which means he's more likely to end up, again, having lots of berries and that sort of thing. So it's almost like there's this huge impact in memory of this intensely positive experience, which then is remembered nostalgically and acts as an orienting force towards that.
There's also a very important point that I think often gets overlooked, that long-term memory encodes almost exclusively semantically. Sure, there's some visual elements or auditory elements, but your long-term memory encodes meaning, which is important because nostalgia relates to your past and largely things that are in your long-term memory and your short-term memory, just for frame of reference, only holds things for about, 30 seconds at most. That's its capacity. Mine probably far less so. But
what was this podcast about again?
I can't remember. But no, anything that's held in your memory for longer than 30 seconds is stored in your long-term memory. And of course,
is there no intermediate stage between long-term and short-term memory?
So there's something called like an executive control function, which kind of is involved in the transfer of things from short-term memory to long-term memory. But usually it's not a deliberate process, is it? You're not deliberately trying, unless you're doing...
If you're learning studying. A language.
However, a key thing there is repetitions.
Yes.
And this is something that suggests that it's involving your unconscious mind far more. It's trying to prime it into...
Right.
Uptaking this information into your long-term memory by making it a more significant event by repeating it again and again and again, because you don't really choose what you remember. You can try, you can deliberately go out of your way to try and remember some things, but there's no guarantee that it will work. However, once something is in your long-term memory, you don't actually forget it. It's the difficulty is in just recalling that information. Some information is easier to recall than others.
Interesting.
But I'm not talking about memory, although I do know a fair amount about it.
And I think it is important for nostalgia, since you can't have nostalgia without memory, I would say.
Well, there's some debate there, because there's some examples down below when I get onto it, where certain media, certain music can evoke feelings of nostalgia, potentially. We'll see what you make of it. But once we get there.
But a more common example would be the nostalgia that we feel for home, for example.
Yes, absolutely. I would say the predominant kind of amount of nostalgia, or the large majority of it, seems to be relating to our own personal experiences. And that's a very important point, because it's almost like a sensation which is associated with us knowing ourselves, isn't it? It requires self-awareness. Also, we don't feel nostalgia on behalf of other people. So, although it sometimes has a bit of a loaded connotation in colloquial terms, you could say it's egocentric. not in a negative light, but just in that it's centered around
sense.
Yeah. Mm. So I think it's good to get onto some examples. And I think one of the most prominent things is when people are kind of away from their most familiar environment, say their home, they feel nostalgic for things that make them think of their home. And for me, where I grew up in off the coast of Devon in Plymouth, sound of the sea, seagulls, it being nice and sunny, although that's very selective memory, which is an important point, actually. The beach, sound of breeze through seas of trees.
The orchards will be in blossom, and the birds will be nesting in the hazel thicket. And they'll be sowing the summer barley in the lower fields.
That reminds me of home.
For me, I find that smells are the most like instantly
that's a very
triggering
interesting
of
point
as well.
As because well. Do you want me to? So your smell is actually the sense that's most connected to your long-term memory,
right?
Which seems unusual, doesn't it? Because most people's main sense is visual. It's our probably one of our better senses. Our capacity to see things.
Well, when we see animals doing what we consider to be dumb things, often it's because they have greatly inferior vision in terms of the way of our spatial awareness and understanding of color and things like that. So, for example, if a dog can't see a ball, I don't know what a red ball on a green background is. That it? Then I forget which dyes that they have in their eyes, but. Like for us, that's blindingly obvious. But for an animal that doesn't have the three color recognition that we have, the trichromatic eye, it's completely ridiculous that you would even expect them to be able to see that. And so I think it's fair to say that vision, even though we can't see as far as an eagle, for example, or something like that, vision is something that we are very powerful at, especially in the broad spectrum that we can see.
Yeah. And it is unusual that smell has such a significant role. And I've looked at this a fair amount because it's a very weird phenomenon and it's very prominent in tests of memory. Like it's a pretty robust effect. It's not like we really doubt it. And I would say that my anecdotal experience backs this up as well in that I can smell something that I haven't even deliberately formed an association with. I'm just like, oh, that the smell of, I don't know, cinnamon reminds me of Christmas or something like that. But the point being here that it's kind of theorized that it's a relic of finding food in the wild, say, and before you eat your food, you smell it, you make sure it smells okay. And I think that seems a little bit weird because it's to the modern kind of person, because if you're seen to be smelling your food, it would be a very antisocial thing
to
do.
But even if you don't deliberately smell it, you still get the scent of it. And also smell and taste are quite intimately linked as well. So there's a lot involved there in detecting the edibility of food, I would imagine.
I know that when my sense of smell was damaged from having COVID, I basically couldn't taste anything. And the whole food experience was changed. It meant that I ate loads of salad, which was good because I was eating much more healthily than I would have otherwise. But yeah, the smell is connected to your taste, and you need to remember these things because you need to remember poisonous foods, because if you eat a poisonous food, you can die.
So that's the association with long-term memory. So perhaps we shouldn't be surprised that it's also quite good at triggering nostalgic memories.
Yeah. So it's very interesting that it takes you back to a time and place. And I find that if I smell something that brings me back... for example, I remember sometimes the smell of an orange will make me think of, I can't remember what the actual tradition is, but when I was a kid, you go to church and you have the orange with the candle. I can't remember
Never
what
heard
that
of this.
Is.
No.
It's probably some random Protestant thing.
Right.
But nevertheless, it reminds me of that. And I'm conjured back to a memory of a place which, even without that, the smell, I wouldn't be able to remember as well as if it hadn't been in kind of association with the smell.
And
in the
if
first
someone
place.
Just told you the name of the ceremony, it would be a much less powerful reminder of the experience.
It's not necessarily even a positive or negative memory. No, it's just just something that happened. Mm-hmm. And it's unusual that you get such an obscure thing kind of coming back to you. But nevertheless, you were talking about the things that make you feel nostalgic.
Yes. I mean, funnily enough, for whatever reason, all of the examples I can think of are to do with foreign travel. So mm-hmm. when you mentioned citrus, I remembered having fresh oranges, for example, on the balcony of a cheap hotel in Crete, which is a lovely memory, just with my family having a proper continental style breakfast, really nice. And when I thought of smell, so I don't know if you've been to South Korea, there's a very particular detergent that everyone seems to use everywhere. And it seems to be only there. And it's not a pleasant smell. It's like some kind of bleach. Mm-hmm. But I just associate that smell, as well as the smell of kimchi, very strongly with South Korea. I could smell that smell and I'd instantly be in Korea. Mm-hmm. And I think I went to a restaurant somewhere in London and there was this smell. And I was instantly back in Korea. It was very weird. And it's not necessarily that I miss that smell or mm-hmm. even miss being in Korea necessarily, but it's just the powerful relationship between that stimulus and that experience. Mm-hmm.
On the topic of smells, I find that when I used to work as a lifeguard when I was younger, and the smell of the chlorine is very similar to the smell of bleach sometimes. Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm putting like bleach down, like a drain or a toilet or something, mm-hmm. I'm immediately reminded of, oh, that terrible job I had. But it's a weird one because that's not even like a positive memory. I hated that job.
Right.
It was terrible and I was terrible at it as well.
Oh dear.
So it's not always a positive thing, although would it be fair to call that nostalgia then if it's not got that positive element? Is it just you associating a memory with another sense?
I do feel that there is going to be some kind of connection, some kind of continuity between the nostalgia that we specifically defined as a positive thing mm-hmm. and the general memories you have of when you were younger that you assign not even a positive or perhaps a negative mm-hmm. value to. I think there is some kind of continuity there, but I don't know.
I would imagine that it, to really make it go into a level of abstraction, mm-hmm. at a neurological level, I think it would be using the same sorts of neural networks mm-hmm. and the same sorts of brain areas which are associated with one another. They just perhaps would, to get even more technical, mm-hmm. I suppose, you wouldn't have the reward center in your brain triggered by the more negative memories.
Right.
Whereas the positive ones, you probably have this reward center triggered, which elicits this positive feeling mm-hmm. when you're actually going back and thinking about
this. So would you say it might be a little bit like deja vu, perhaps, where you have the feeling of having experienced something more than once, but the feeling itself is sort of overlaid on an experience, regardless of whether you've actually experienced it before? Mm-hmm.
Well, deja vu is an interesting thing because I know I've heard that it's almost like a glitch in your brain where one hemisphere communicates something slightly quicker or slower than the other hemisphere of your brain. Mm-hmm. And it's like a sign of hemispheric lag, which is actually a marker of onset of strokes and things like that. So if you have lots of deja vu, be careful, is my advice.
I mean, I'm sure a certain
amount is okay.
Yes, I'm sure that there's also a possibility if you're having a lot of deja vu, there's nothing to do with the stroke as well. So don't get overly worried by that.
That is a fair point, yes.
As funnily enough, I used to have deja vu a lot, but not since I started this job.
Yeah, well, that is interesting because I went through periods of time of having deja vu for quite frequently, almost arbitrarily, really. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't that I'd changed anything, and then all of a sudden it stops for a while, and then doesn't come back for a long time, and then all of a sudden you'll just get it once, and then it'll come back again.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm actually starting to feel nostalgic for my deja vu, which brings us back to the topic of this.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.